Hey, welcome back to the Amber May Show. I am so glad my Amber May Show family is here today. I have a great show for you today. I am talking to Ryan Heath. He is the founder of the Gavel Project. It's a nonprofit that helps if you have a lawsuit that you need to that further civil rights cases like election integrity or things of that nature, then he offers his services pro bono, but he needs assistance. He has the 501c3. And if we can all support an attorney like this, it's worth it because it's very expensive to sue. And that's why so many people don't, when they actually do have a right to sue, they don't, because it is very expensive. So if we can rally around this gentleman, it would be amazing. And so we're going to find out more about the Gavel Project on the show today. But he sued Kerry Lake's Judge Thompson. And so we're going to find out a little bit more about that in the case of his in the court, and where is it at today. So that's coming up on the episode, so I hope you really like it. Please like, share, and subscribe. We need to get this information out far and wide, because Ryan helps people all over the country with civil rights cases. So that means people that you know in your neighborhood need to know that he exists. So please share this far and wide. Join me on Telegram. I had more content on Telegram at The Amber May Show. You can find me at True Social Amber May or Frank Social Amber May. If you believe in what I'm doing, please consider becoming an angel investor. You can do so by going to the website, theambermayshow.com, and donate whatever amount you feel like you could do. Or you could go to theambermayshow.locals.com and become a $5 monthly subscriber there. But coming up next, I have Ryan Heath joining me on this episode, and we're going to be talking about election integrity. Guys, I have an attorney and he's doing big things, and something that a lot of attorneys haven't done in the past is sue judges. So he is suing the judge that oversaw the court, Kerry Lake's court case. And joining me today is Ryan. He has started the Gavel Project, and we're going to learn a little bit more about that. But welcome to the program. Appreciate you coming on.
Hi, Amber. Thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here.
So I want to give a little backdrop into who you are as a person and how the Gavel Project came about. And then I want to go into like what got you wanting to sue Judge Thompson, Kerry Lake's judge presiding over her case. So let us in a little bit about who Ryan is.
Yeah, so I'm an attorney, licensed in Arizona. I don't dress like it, but I'm a father primarily, and I have two little kids, two little girls, both of them are under five. And I had my first daughter in law school my second year, and was really blessed to get out of law school debt free. I went on a near full ride to Regent University School of Law, and you know, as a father and as a proud American, I was just kind of sitting by, pulling my hair out, watching our country devolve into chaos over the 2021 timeframe after getting licensed in 2020, and I just couldn't take it anymore with the vaccine mandate. So I quit my job in October of 21 and started a nonprofit without any seed money. I liquidated a vehicle. My wife was pregnant with our second daughter at the time, 7 months along. So we were in a pretty risky situation, but I had confidence in myself. I'm a very talented attorney. I don't mean to say that to be self-aggrandizing at all. I went to Regent and I had the opportunity to learn constitutional interpretation directly from Justice Alito at the U.S. Supreme Court. So, yeah, I have a pretty strong background in this particular area, which is constitutional law, which is what I focus on. So, we stand for basically the rule of law and defending the American dream for future generations. And we are the anti-woke 501c3, and we're fighting all sorts of issues from coast to coast, Virginia to California. So who we are and what we're doing.
That's wonderful. So if anyone, like, as we get into it, like, what are the things that you focus on with the Gavel Project? So if someone's listening to this episode and they're like, I wonder if he could help me in my situation. Like, what kind of laws or what kind of things do you help people with that are across the country? What's your area?
Yeah, so we've got a bunch of cases, really anything that has to deal with, leftist ideologues abusing people out of, for dogmatic principles, we fight those issues. So for instance, at the beginning of 2020, actually 22, around this time last year, I was flying around the state of California and I was teaching kids and their families to disobey their school's mask mandates. And so we filed our first lawsuit against Coronado Unified School District in August of this last year. And we're in the pretrial stages of that litigation right now. We named all of the individual school board members personally because the Civil Rights Act actually allows you to bring personal lawsuits against individuals who violate your First Amendment rights. So those are the types of cases we take. We take COVID mandate cases, CRT in schools, gender affirmation therapy in schools. We take really any issue that is detrimental to society. We can take on those types of issues, whether it be from the government abusing you or let's say a corporation poisoning the drinking water in a town. Those are the types of cases we can take on. We have a case selection committee at the Gavel Project that the people apply for representation. And then we actually cover the entire cost of litigation for our charitable beneficiaries. So that's what
amazing.
We do.
And
who we are.
Wow, that's so impressive to me. So thank obviously you're going to need funding for it. So I assume somewhere on the website, there's a place people can donate money to, right?
That's correct. And I would encourage folks to do so. We are a 501c3. Donations are tax deductible to the maximum extent allowed by law. And so I would encourage everyone to go and make a tax deductible gift today because we are paying attorneys all over the nation to fight the most important issues for you. And unfortunately, our content is heavily suppressed online. So I would encourage you as well to go onto our Instagram page. We are at the Gavel Project. Follow us on Twitter at the Gavel Project as well. In fact, our account's suspended right now for no apparent reason.
Of course.
So yeah, it seems to be part of the territory here. So you can find us pretty much anywhere at the Gavel Project, and I'll encourage you to learn more about us through doing so.
And since your focus on the Constitution, are you working with any state legislators? Because what I've noticed is they have the right heart, but they don't all know what tools they really have available through the Arizona Constitution or their state constitution. And I think that some of the attorneys down there might be misleading them, or maybe they're just not as educated in constitutional law or law in general that aren't giving them saying, hey, state legislator, you have the power to do X, Y, and Z. Are you working with any of the legislators to help teach them about the true power that they hold?
I'm not, but I would be open to doing so. I was asked to speak at the Virginia Assembly today for one of the cases that we have out there, a young girl named Sage, who was unfortunately sex trafficked as a result of woke ideologues abusing her. That was twice that happened to her, unfortunately. And so we're funding a lawsuit to hold the school counselors and the individuals involved in her trafficking accountable. But yeah, it's something that I'm open to. I'd love to speak with the state legislatures about what it is that they have the authority to do and what it is they don't have the authority to do as well, to make sure that these people understand the limitations on their power, because that's also important.
Yeah, it's very important. And that's what I have noticed with legislators, that they really get in there for the good reasons, but then those attorneys don't totally guide them correctly for whatever reason. Maybe they just don't know, or maybe they do know when they don't want them to have the power. I don't know. But I admire you about that. So now fast forward. So we saw the Carrie Lake trial. And at first I was like, well, maybe this judge really will help us win. At first I thought maybe this judge is a great judge, but I don't know. Was he threatened? I don't know. Was he already, paid off? This election integrity thing isn't new. The establishment have been putting their judges in place for a long time. We always hear about a term packing the court. Well, I think they've done that very successfully, because it's hard to find remedy when it was clear, everyone saw what happened in 2020. You're from Arizona. You saw everywhere you would go, there was the Trump flags, the Trump signs, everywhere you went, the Trump trains, the Trump rallies, and how many people went. And then they tell us Joe Biden won, the guy who never came out and campaigned at all or very little. And the same thing with Carrie Lake. Hobbs didn't hardly campaign, but Carrie Lake was all over the state campaigning. Her signs were everywhere. And then they're like, sorry, Carrie Lake lost. And then we literally saw what happened at the polling places. Machine failures, unable to really cast a vote, things going into adjudication, and it goes on and on. And if you listen to any of her hearings or what happened in the state legislature with the hearings with Shelby Bush, you realize there was a lot of maladministration that happened on our elections. So what led you, because I thought that was really brave. I've never heard of an attorney suing a judge before. So what led you to find like, let me go after Judge Thompson. Let me sue him. How did that all come about?
Yeah, so I originally filed in Mojave County. I was actually representing Senator Borelli, State Senator Borelli,
Oh,
here in
I love
Arizona,
him.
in Mojave County. And we had a couple issues with the summons that was automatically produced by the TurboCourt e-filing system. So as an attorney, basically the way that you file lawsuits is you go through the e-Turbo, filing system, which is a web portal. And when you submit the complaint, typically it auto produces a summons, which is the document you give to the defendant, letting them know they've been sued and bringing them to court. Under the Arizona revised statutes, in this particular instance, the summons requires that there be a specific form. It says that you have to provide an answer within 5 days. And the statutory law on elections is very clear. It's mandatory. It's not advisory. You can't just, get a summons that's incorrectly issued saying they can respond within 20 days and then use that. And so the day after filing, when I had the summons auto produced, I reached out to the judge's judicial assistant and I asked, I said, hey, this is incorrect. Can we get it fixed, please? And so for the next 3 days, this was on Monday, I believe, the next 3 days up until Friday, there were nine emails that went back and forth between myself and the Mojave County Court, where she was CC'd, the judicial assistant was CC'd to each of those emails. And first, she told me I needed to fix it. And then throughout that time, it took an additional 3 days for the summons to get fixed. So the day before this hearing set for Friday, I finally get the correct summons back from the court. And then the next day at the hearing, we have the case dismissed for what's called laches or failure to prosecute because we hadn't served the summons on the defendants. But it wouldn't have been possible for us to do so because we didn't get it back from the court until the day before that. So really, we basically had our case kicked out for the court's failure, and despite the request of the court as well, to actually comply with this very particular statute. And so that was frustrating. And then we were sitting on the sidelines debating whether to make that appeal. And this was all while Carrie Lake's trial was happening. And Carrie Lake had actually filed a count three, which alleged a violation of ARS 16550A, which is the crux of my lawsuit as well. And so I was assuming in the background, basically, that their attorneys were going to bring forth the seminal case in this matter, which is Reyes v. Cumming, right? And this is a case out of Yuma from 1997 that overturned a county board of supervisors election a year after the election was actually held. They kicked the supervisor out of the seat. And so basically what happened was the attorneys for Ms. Lake cited Miller, the Picacho Peak Elementary School District, which is the case, the precursor to Reyes. But Reyes wasn't available in the LexisNexis database, which is the large database attorneys use to actually
Okay.
research the law and do their. They didn't have access to the seminal case that would have required Judge Thompson to rule in favor of Ms. Lake. I was apparently the only attorney in the state of Arizona to find this case in my research for an election challenge. And
Wow, that's
so,
impressive.
thank you. I've been very blessed, and I have obsessive tendencies because of my ADHD, and this is one of those areas that I do very well in is legal research and writing. And so I did find this case, and unfortunately, when the judge's opinion came out on December 24th, dismissing basically all of Ms. Lake's claims, he didn't cite the case. In fact, he said that this had never happened before in the United States history, as far as he could tell. And that's because, unfortunately, none of the attorneys in the case found or in the case found this binding precedent and brought it to his attention. And so I filed what's called a writ of mandamus in the Arizona Supreme Court, which is basically a request to have the Arizona Supreme Court to intervene and order Judge Thompson to follow binding precedent.
Hey, I'm going to get to that thought in just a second, but right now I'm going to take a quick break.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, and I want to thank each and every one of you for your support by bringing you the pillow that started it all. Get my standard My Pillow, regularly $49.98, now only $19.98 with your promo code. Just like all of you, I've tried every pillow out there and none of them worked. That's why I invented My Pillow. My patented fill adjusts to your exact individual needs, helps keep your neck aligned, and it holds its shape all night long, regardless of your sleep position. So you get the best sleep of your life. Because it works, we've sold over 70 million MyPillows, and now I'm bringing them to you for the lowest price ever. Go to MyPillow.com or call the number on your screen. Use your promo code, and you'll get my standard MyPillow for only $19.98. For a more custom fit, my Premium Queen for only $27.98. Or my Premium King, only $34.98. My 60-day money-back guarantees it'll be the most comfortable pillow you'll ever own.
Government-induced inflation, taxes, rising interest rates, all of these can have a dramatic effect on our investments. So why not buy some gold and silver? Gold and silver throughout history has been a stabilizer in people's portfolio. Protect your wealth, protect your assets by purchasing gold and silver. The easiest way to do that is contacting Jim, who you've seen on our program, Jim Tewalt, with EPS Wealth Management. That's Edward Paul Sam, EPSWealthManagement.com. There you can go ahead and contact him and say, hey, I would love to get my hands on some gold and silver, especially with the electronic currency that is looming on our horizon. So if they go to a total digital currency, it might be wise to have some tangible assets in your portfolio for trading, because you never know when they might cut off your income stream. So go to EPS, Edward Paul Sam, EPSWealthManagement.com. Ask for Jim Tewalt to make sure you have some gold and silver in your portfolio. Let him know Amber May sent you.
Hey there, I'm Darren.
And I'm Randy.
We're from Patriots with Grit, and you're watching The Amber May Show.
Check it out.
Hey guys, I want to give you a pro tip to help keep your family healthy when everyone around you is coughing, sniffling, or sneezing, okay? Here's what I want you to do. I want you to go first to drstellamd.com. When you're there, go ahead and grab some COVID bites. Also, get your ivermectin. Set up your telemed appointment and get your ivermectin. I'm going to give you a promo code to help you save some money, and use promo code AMBERMAY, one word, and that'll help you save money. Now, here's your pro tip for you. You can use this on your entire family. The adult doses too. I've talked to a medical expert. They said cut it in half when you're dealing with children. So one tablet. What I do with my kids, because it's just too big of a pill for them, I get a blender. I put a pill in there. I fill it with water and like some flavoring. And then boom, I have them drink it before school. Pro tip, and what it has, and it's amazing. It has quercetin, vitamin D, vitamin C, zinc, all the therapeutics to help keep your body healthy and working at optimum health. Support your body's immune system when you use the COVID bites. They're amazing. So go to drstellamd.com, grab your COVID bites, get your ivermectin, use promo code Amber May, and save some money. You are listening to the Amber May Show, and now we return to the show already in progress.
And as I've explained multiple times, and I'll do so again here, I don't believe he made any intentional errors. I think this was just simply an oversight. And frankly, the Elias Law Group and Perkins Coie, which are two of the biggest law groups in the nation with, you know, the unlimited amount of firepower, I have a very hard time believing they did not find Reyes v. Cumming when they originally filed this case. And I believe personally they violated their ethical duty of candor to the court, and should be subject to disciplinary proceedings by the State Bar of Arizona for failing to disclose binding precedent that is antithetical to their position. They should have done what attorneys are supposed to do, which is cite the case and explain why it doesn't apply in these circumstances, as opposed to just ignoring it. In reality, Katie Hobbs, because of the way that Maricopa County compared signatures at the level two process using criteria that were not allowed by ARS 16550A, it should not be the governor of Arizona. She as a matter of law, is required to be taken out of office. And that actually, the unanimous Court of Appeals in 1997 said it's an abuse of discretion to find that a county substantially complies with the requirements of 550A. It's a mandatory law. You cannot deviate from the very specific language. And any deviation requires, as a matter of law, that the election results from the entire county be struck from the entire race. So that's, wow. It's very clear. And in my opinion, Carrie Lake will be governor of Arizona because of this.
I would love that, because there's so many good election integrity laws that they want to pass at the state legislature, but they know as soon as if it passes both houses, Hobbs already has pictures of her with her veto stamp saying she already knows she's going to veto a lot of bills. I mean, it's sickening. You get to a point as someone who casts, you know, goes to vote, you get to a point where like you're wondering, why do I even bother when I know they're just going to pick whoever they want to win? We saw what happened in 22. It was a disaster of an election. The county board of supervisors, I don't know who, maybe you can answer this question. Who has the authority to redo an election? Like, if I'm the county board of supervisor and I see what happened in 22 and machines were failing at over 50% and there was long lines and there's just problem after problem after problem with the election, I'm thinking, if from a person who's, you know, just a voter, I'm thinking, okay, well, if you're in charge of elections, let's do a new election because we had so many issues. Who actually has the ability to make that call?
I'm sorry, I don't have an answer for you.
You
on
don't?
That.
Okay, I just
no,
thought
that's
maybe
so.
You might.
I, as an attorney, you know, I still have a limited base of knowledge. I don't know all of the statutes and how all of the different statutes work together. But I know that in this particular instance, when it comes to this type of violation, there is no wiggle room. And the fact that the Maricopa County has admitted to violating the express requirements of this non-technical statute, which is what it is, it's a substantive right to have your votes tabulated in a very specific way that was set by the Arizona state legislature. And any deviation from that right exposes the Arizona election to, you know, potential tampering, fraud, undue influence. And these laws were set up to prevent precisely that. And so that's why it's a non-technical statute and why it requires setting aside the election in Maricopa County.
Do the PACs that Richer and Gates created, does that play any part of any of these election lawsuits that are going on in the court cases? Because it feels like if you're in charge of an election and then you're campaigning directly for people that are in your elections, it just doesn't seem very ethical that you could be creating a PAC to campaign against people when you're in charge of counting the votes. Is there anything that can be done in these lawsuits regarding the political action committee Richer and Gates are a part of?
I can tell you that I have many people reaching out to me from Maricopa County right now that were in fact disenfranchised by the conduct of Mr. Richer and Mr. Gates, and as well as many other supervisors that were involved in election department officials. And I could tell you that based on my experience as a civil rights activist and as someone who's done this before in different contexts, the Title 42, Section 1983 of the United States Code is a very powerful code. It's the Civil Rights Act. And it actually allows you to bring claims for damages against individual, say, county-level officials who recklessly violate your constitutional rights, actually personal lawsuits against those individuals for damages against them as individuals, not just the county. And I can tell you, I'm planning these lawsuits now. We are going, and this will be great evidence showing their mens rea, showing their intent to have this particular outcome manifest. And we intend to hold these folks personally accountable. So those who are interested in being a plaintiff, those who were actually disenfranchised, if you were left waiting in line after the polls closed on election day on November 8th, or if you were told to leave and put your ballot in a different location, or for whatever reason, if there was some sort of, you know, maladministration by the county, Maricopa County, and you would like to have your rights vindicated, or for monetary damages, please feel free to contact me at rheathesq@proton.me. That would be my for-profit firm. That's Heath Law PLLC. And we will be looking to file claims against those individuals for personal damages, because you should be able to do that to hold these folks accountable. And you in fact can, which is it's a beautiful thing.
So it was the first time in my life that I ever heard you can check out once you check in. And that was a disaster in and of itself, the check-in, check-out process. Do you have any insight on – that's what I was wondering. I was wondering that. Could you really – that's just asking for fraud. I mean, that's asking for it, saying people can check. I know people that went to three different polling places trying to vote. They checked into one, couldn't vote, went to another place, couldn't vote, had to go to another place. Finally, they were able to cast a ballot. I mean, can you talk a little bit about that? Because we're told by an election official, it's okay, you can check in and out. Nobody knew how to do that.
Yeah, one of the things that Bush v. Gore talks about, which is very clear, and this has to do with your federal constitutional rights, is that once the state prescribes a voting process, you have a fundamental right to vote in that precise manner. Right. So any deviation from that causes you to be disenfranchised as a voter is a violation of your constitutional rights. It's a per se violation. You can sue and have your rights vindicated for that. Actually, this is the same reason that Al Gore lost. They stopped counting the votes in Miami-Dade County. And it's because they were not using a standard uniform process to tabulate those votes, right? Mm-hmm. And the same is true with this election checkout procedure as well. That this, in fact, was not even mentioned in the training manual for poll workers. I read through it. It's not in there. Checkout procedure isn't even mentioned. You can control find it. It's just like, come on, guys. So this was a process that was apparently adopted as a way to try and quell the chaos on election day by the county. And you know what? It wasn't, none of the poll workers, to my knowledge, had any training on this procedure. If anyone had any training, it may have been the supervisors on site at these locations, but it's not mm-hmm. clear that these people were trained on it either. Mm-hmm. In any event, what you have is you have someone adopting a novel process on election day that is resulting in people being disenfranchised. So you have a constitutional violation. You know, even if they were, say, trying to fix the problem with people mm-hmm. not being granted the right mm-hmm. to have their votes tabulated on site, which, by the way, is also a fundamental right. It's been something that Maricopa County has been doing since 1992, as long as I've been alive, is on-site tabulation. And the fact that they're not actually granting you the right to have your vote tabulated so you can see that it's being counted right. as you're on site is also that's a foundational right per the 14th Amendment, because once it's been conferred by the state legislature or by the voting authority, any deviation is a violation of your right. Okay, so you actually mm-hmm. have a constitutional right in Maricopa County to have your votes tabulated on site, and they violated that as well. And that's not a part of my lawsuit. That can be a part of future lawsuits, and that's something we'll be sticking in as well for additional claims. But that's the issue. Is you know, you need to abide by the process that you adopted for voting. And if you don't, then the alternative option needs to be as little of a burden as possible on you, your right to vote in that way. So they need to create a new, basically, process that is akin to the process they'd already adopted as closely mm-hmm. as possible. And the fact that they actually had, let's say these special voting machines on site, actually by law, they're required to do so by HABA. They have all these easy access voting machines for people with disabilities to vote on site that have mm-hmm. the capacity of individuals to have their votes tabulated through using those easy access voting machines. It means they actually had a least restrictive alternative they could have adopted on election day that was available at every single location. And instead, they chose to adopt a new procedure that ended up disenfranchising people. So that not only is it going to be their burden to show that adopting the new checkout procedure was the least restrictive means with respect to the constitutional standard they have to meet, they're not going to be able to do it because there were alternatives available that would have been less constitutionally burdensome on your right to actually exercise the the franchise and have your vote tabulated on site as you were promised by the legislature or promised by Maricopa County, excuse me, that you would be able to do?
Yeah, it was very chaotic trying to vote in that election. So if you win with your lawsuit against Judge Thompson, what happens then if you win? What happens? What's the next thing that could happen?
Well, I don't believe that my claim will go much further with the Arizona Supreme Court. I actually got an order Friday afternoon pretty late basically saying that one, we're going to dismiss your case, but we're going to do so with leave to amend, or basically leave to file as amicus curiae in the appellate court. Per the schedule set, and this is the exact language, you can file as amicus curiae in the appellate court per the schedule set by the court. The problem is that this order was issued on the 27th, and the window for me filing as amicus curiae was the 26th.
So they did it against you. This is the second time they did this to you.
This is the second time I've had Arizona court basically tell me to get lost for a mistake that was not mine in this particular case. So you know what, I'm more than happy, and I don't blame them. Perhaps there was an oversight here. I filed a motion this morning around 5 a.m. I've been working on through the weekend. I have my daughters as well, so I didn't have time to get this in Friday. Unfortunately, I was watching two little girls.
Sure,
but I got it in as soon as I could. And, you know, with my wife traveling, I had to be able to make the sacrifice. So I did so. And I'm hoping that they grant me leave to file as amicus. I've asked for to basically till the end of the day tomorrow, the end of the day tomorrow before the case actually starts on Wednesday to file as amicus. And I've also, as well, and perhaps Carrie will see this, I've gone ahead and offered my services to her as an attorney if she wants me to come in and make the very limited argument on ARS 16550A, which I believe I'm the best at when it comes to this particular issue, because no one else has really read the case as much as I have, given how long I've had with it. I'd be happy to do that as well, and I'm prepared to do so. So maybe I'll hear from her and show up on court on Wednesday. So
that would be very awesome. Like, when I heard about your case, I thought, would one judge really rule against another judge as far as, like, you know, going on your side versus going on the other judge's side? And I'm just like, I bet it's like a club. I don't know. From the outsider's perspective, I just see the whole court process like a big old club, and possibly why we are not seeing the justice that Arizona wants to see. I mean, this is not the first time we've sued for elections, and we keep hearing, oh, you know, there's no standing and there's no this, and then finally went in court, and then I think Judge Thomas's ruling was awful, and hence you know, your lawsuit comes into play, and then the things that they've done to your court cases. It's just like, where is the Arizona people going to get remedy from? And it's really frustrating, and I bet it has to be frustrating for you as someone who works in the court system. What is that like for you as you're trying to fix things, as you're trying to make the world a better place for your kids and future generations?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, the mistakes here and there are definitely frustrating. As someone, though, who has a heck of a lot of faith in the court system, I actually think it's the last place we can turn to as a nation to be able to vindicate our rights, because, and I say this and my filing this morning as well, you know, society can only function so long as there are objective standards of justice that we can point to and invoke, and that the courts have to respect. Otherwise, we're talking about, you know, spiraling into a state of actual chaos where violence becomes a real possibility. Mm-hmm. And the motto of our nonprofit is better a gavel than a gun. Because I believe that, you know, the solution, the best solution, is always going to be the peaceful solution, that is in the court system. And so at the end of the day, you know, the one thing the left does very well is the legal activism. The one thing the right has not done traditionally well is legal activism. Mm-hmm. And I happen to be a very creative, very bold, I'll call it that, person who's willing to stand up and make novel arguments, and the Lord blessed me with the capacity to do so, and I intend to do so for the rest of my life, and I intend to help as many people as possible, Particularly, I'm interested in protecting as many children as possible, which is where the vast majority of my time is spent. So, you know, this decision was basically a decision out of philanthropic efficiency. I knew that if I didn't sue Katie Hobbs in some capacity now and try to get her out of office, I was going to spend hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars as an anti-woke nonprofit fighting here in Arizona over the next few years, as opposed to being able to expend those resources in other states where they're more needed. And so I believe that, you know, at the end of the day, when you stand up for righteousness, God stands by your side. And so I'm excited to continue to wage these battles in the legal system on behalf of people.
Oh, I believe that 100%. You know, we might have some captured courts, but I do know God always puts a remnant out there. He doesn't totally leave us deprived of justice, because what, our God is a God of justice and he values justice. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I remember the parable of the widow going, I think it was a widow going before a judge over and over and over and over again. And finally the judge had enough. He was like, I'm going to give her the justice. I'm tired of her coming to my court. And so I think that that's something, as long as we can continue to bombard the courts and we keep petitioning and people keep rising up with the court of public opinion. I think the court of public opinion is the strongest court we have in the United States. I think you alluded to that. If we can convince the court of public opinion and we can keep bombarding the courts, I think someone's going to be tired eventually and say, fine, you're getting justice, because I'm tired of hearing about this. That's what I hope will happen.
Yeah, well, I mean, at the end of the day, the justices in the Arizona Supreme Court as well are accountable to the voters. And so, you know, I believe that this, their failure to see the deadline, in my case, for filing amicus curiae was an honest mistake. And I believe that they will rectify the situation and allow me to file as amicus. I'm hopeful of that. But if not, you know, the other option I have is, again, is for Carrie Lake to just hire me. And I'd be more than happy to come in and represent her, because I do know this issue incredibly well. And I'd be happy to make that argument on her behalf. So,
well, that's awesome. I'll see if I can't pass your info along to her people, because that would be great. I'm impressed with what I've heard so far today on this interview.
Thank you.
I like your tenacity. And you know what? Everybody who hires a lawyer wants a confident lawyer. They don't want someone to say, I think I can win. No, they want an attorney when they hire them to say, I know I can win. That's what's attracted to people when they're looking for an attorney. Not, I'll do the best I can. No, like, I love how you're presenting yourself and you're like, I am the best there is. Like, I can help. Because we do need really good attorneys out there that know the law, know the Constitution. Because like I said before, I think some of our state legislators, the attorneys there, I don't know that they're that super versed, because it's been we the people going up petitioning our legislators for, hey, you do have the power to do X, Y, and Z. You do have the power to do this, and encouraging them to use the powers that have been given to them by the state Constitution. And then there's been private attorneys like you that have dealt with some of the state legislators saying, hey, you have this power. That's the thing I think we lack in the United States, is the real knowledge of what does our Constitution say. I think we could spend more time in school learning that. But I think our state Constitution is a very powerful document that we need to spend some more time investigating. So how do people reach you if they are looking and need legal assistance? How do they go about and reach you?
Yeah, so if you want my help as far as the nonprofit goes, if you have a situation where there's a public benefit to be had from your claim, then I would encourage you to go to thegavelproject.com. You can go to the contact page there. We have some different fields you can fill out. Tell us about your situation. Apply for representation. We are 100% crowdsource funded, and we are resource limited. So for those folks out there with the capacity to give, I ask that you please consider doing so. Go to our website, thegavelproject.com. You know, my wife and I have made significant sacrifices for this. We've had one car for over a year because we sold my truck at the beginning of this to be able to fund things. So we're well invested. We've spent over $100,000 within the last just over a year now, and we've raised nearly as much, and we're doing very well with our crowdsource funding. I want to thank all the folks out there. If you're listening to this and you have given, thank you. We wouldn't be able to be where we are today. Having this fight if it weren't for you, because you know, my time. I've given over a year to the charity pro bono work, and I'm an attorney. I get paid quite a lot of money when I do work for pay. So if you want to support us so that we can continue to function, I can continue to take on these different types of cases outside of the Gavel Project, like this election work, then it's imperative for us to have the resources so that I don't have to spend all my time fundraising, so I can take on this additional work. So please support us, thegavelproject.com. You can donate right there. Follow us on social media. We are at The Gavel Project on pretty much every platform. And as well, if you want to learn more specifically about the work we're doing, you can go to our Substack. That is thegavelproject.substack.com.
Well, thank you so much for your time today. I really, really appreciate
you. Thank you, Amber. Yeah, I'm glad to be here, and we'll chat again sometime, I'm sure.
It's the year 2023, and the warrior women of God have been preparing for this day for generations, and have walked through deep valleys to be ready for such a time as this. The God of all gods, the King of the universe, chose them from birth. He destined their very DNA for such a time as this. No one could have known when these women were little girls, they would be called to battle on the front lines during a biblical war of good versus evil. Except God. He knew. For He has been preparing you for such a time as this. We have been called to intercede, pray, activate, and be the warrior bride that God made us to be. Is that you? Esther was called for such a time as this. She was chosen to go before the king, prepare his heart, and save her people. Join us at the first ever Esther's Rising event in Branson, Missouri. You will learn from extraordinary women who are fighting on the front lines of the battlefield. You will leave activated, prayed for, and given tools to step out and be the Esther you were created to be. Join us at the God and Country Theater in beautiful Branson, Missouri, March 4th, 2023. Who knows if you haven't been brought into the kingdom for such a time as this. Register now for Esther's Rising at www.tanyajoy.tv/Esther. And join us in Branson, Missouri on March 4th, 2023 at the God and Country Theater.
Do you like coffee? And do you want to lose some weight? You never know when baby season's here. And what about the holidays? After the holiday pounds, we all know that the holiday pounds. Let's nick the holiday pounds. Summer quickly approaches. It's here before we know it. And then we haven't hit our weight loss goals. So let me tell you about this amazing coffee. And if I say that, it's a big deal because I don't like coffee, but this coffee is really good tasting, really delicious. It's called Java, and it's from My Infinity. So if you go to ambermay.myinfinity.com, the links are in the description, you can get a coffee that tastes amazing and will help you lose weight at the same time. It's incredible. So make sure you click the link below in the description or go to ambermay.myinfinity.com right now and get the Java. Get it now, start losing weight, and get your coffee that tastes amazing. So what's there to lose? Oh yeah, just the weight. AmberMay.myInfinity.com. When you have your holiday, you could get the beloved cheesecakes. They're so delicious. I'm so excited. We have family over. We're going to enjoy this wonderful, delicious cheesecake. And if you use promo code Amber, you could save some money at checkout.
It was so delicious. I was only going to have one piece. But I had to cut it. I had her cut the piece just like the sliver. I got to have three pieces.
What do you think about the cheesecake?
I loved it. It was really rich, really yummy. I had the chocolate, and it was very, very good. And I really appreciate you that we got to eat some. Thank you.
Hey, so when it's the next celebration in your household, or you have company coming over, or you just have a craving for cheesecake, make sure you visit belovedcheesecake.com. Use promo code AmberMay at checkout to save some money. That's belovedcheesecakes.com. amber.com. Remember, promo code AMBER at checkout.